The Devil's Advocates radio show is broadcast under a time brokerage agreement between Devil Radio and Civic Media, Inc. Some portions of this program may be pre-recorded. Warning! You are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever, and due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. Now live from the Civic Media Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning, welcome to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
And now, here's your hosts, Dom and Kroot.
Welcome to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Dom, it's the day before Trump. I feel like it's the calm before the storm.
He is the storm, Crudy. Don't you know? Good to see you, man. Rich on the board. Thank you for putting up with us, my friend. First, our fair audience. Thank you. Welcome to the political party.
It will be a party. I hope it will be a party. Looking forward to the party and to your phone calls. 844-967-2789. Dumb, so much to talk about. But we'd like to lead local. We'd like to lead local. Keep it in the backyard. But I got to tell you a little story. Last night, I turn on the MSNBC. Not in real time, but late at night. I've had a little insomnia and staying up late. So I turn on, and here is Rachel Maddow. And I'm not even sure if it was... Yeah, I guess yesterday's Monday. She only does the Mondays.
Those Monday shows, right.
Which tells me I missed the Jon Stewart last night. But anyways, I found the Rachel Maddow at like midnight, and I'm watching her, and she leads the show last night, the midnight edition, with Eric Hudvey. And she also struggled to know how to say his name.
Hudvey.
Well, she didn't seem very confident. But anyways, it was interesting, and she set it in the whole Veep background, and they played the video of Hudvey at the Slinger Speedway. You know, Rich, that's what I should have been asking for. I should have been asking for the Eric Hudvey sound. Do we have that from the other day?
It's buried in there somewhere.
See if you can find it, Rich. Don't need it right away, but we'll get to it.
I was focused on something else. You need Hudvey from what?
The other day, when he was at the Slinger Speedway.
All right.
Yeah. Doing the Pledge of Allegiance.
That's what he messed up.
I'll dig her up.
I'm such a patriot. I love my country. Let us do the Pledge of Allegiance together. And then he messed it up.
Say your names.
Say your name.
So Rachel Maddow leads with the guy last night, but led with him. And we've played the sound here recently, but led with him at the Slinger Speedway, ham-handedly going through the Pledge of Allegiance. And I found it quite funny. And the setting, she compared it to the Veep. I think maybe it was the Democratic Party. Maybe Ben Wickler put it out there on the Twitterverse.
Wickler did. We retweeted it. Check out at Devil Radio. It's there as well.
And Elaine, the former Elaine from Seinfeld, well, she was the Veep, right? What's her name? Louise Dreyfus?
Oh, right. Yeah.
It was very funny. They put it in the context next to side by side. They played a lot of Veep clips, and then they played Eric Hudvey's clip, you know, kind of side by side. And it was fun. It was interesting, but it's always a little sad when you see a candidate from Wisconsin leading the national news. I mean,
What are we known for? We're known for sports teams, right? Of course.
Drinking.
Green Bay Packers, right? We're known for drinking, right? We're known for, we've had a few, you know, serial killers. We had a few of those. And bad governance. We are known for bad governance.
Well, in this case, he's not governing yet. He's candidate, Eric Hudvey. Here he is.
Candidates.
Thank you, Rich, for the hard work. Here he was at the Slinger Speedway set to the Veep soundtrack. Play it for the people.
I'm proud to be an American. I love my country. So let's say the Pledge of Allegiance together. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. Amen.
You know, there were other parts that we didn't play for the audience. First and foremost, when the Slinger, I assume it was the Slinger High School band, when they played the national anthem, Hudvey was kicking stones with both hands in his pockets. And he looked over and the farmer next to him was holding his hat over his heart, as people traditionally do during the playing of the national anthem. And then he was guilted into doing it.
Yeah. He loves his country so much, he was guilted by somebody else to put his hand over his heart.
And then the band exited, and it was like he got stuck, like, you know, after you. But it was a whole marching band. So Hudvey's like, after you. Not his finest moment. Maybe it was. Who knows?
I mean, it could always get worse, right?
Well, the other part of Eric Hudvey's resume she noted is the fact that he basically resides in Laguna Beach, Orange County, California. And he has been named one of Orange County's 500 most influential people. And then they brought out the unfortunate things he said about the elderly and the fact they're going to die soon.
And you know, in a nursing home is at a point to vote. I mean, come on.
And then his clean it up comments that didn't clean it up. I'm thinking, Rachel Maddow, you're reading our minds. You're listening to the devil's advocates. Because yeah. It sounded very, very similar to something we would do. And then, you know, anyways, she pointed out the flaws in this candidate. And then she went through a whole series of Republican candidates for the U.S. Senate that are not from the states they are running in. You know, think of Dr. Oz, the wannabe senator that ran against Fetterman in Pennsylvania, except he resides in Jersey. And here in Wisconsin, we've had recent history. We had gubernatorial candidate Tim Michaels, who flew in and told Wisconsinites they were lazy to their faces last time Donald Trump, well, at least the last time Donald Trump came to Waukesha, but he's coming again tomorrow, Dom. I'm very excited. I'm credentialed. I'm sort of going to do a touch and go. I'm very excited to see what local politicians are going to go on the stage with Trump. And then by the time Trump actually makes it on the stage, I'm thinking I do the Irish exit. Just sort of sneak out the back.
Get out.
And, you know, if someone will be playing his speech, it's the other guys. I want to see the look on Eric Hudvey's face when Trump gives him that big smooch on the mouth.
What are the chances you think Donald Trump properly gets Hudvey's name? I mean, wasn't Grothman for a while?
I think Grothman. I'm to this day, I'm not clear if Grothman changed his name to Grothman because that's what the former president used to call him. Well, I guess I'm Grothman now.
From now on, your name is Pinto. Why Pinto? Why not?
I thought it was Flounder. 844.
That's a common mistake.
967-2789. So anyways, he led Eric Hudvey. I think that's how you say it. Led the Rachel Maddow show last night. And I watched it very late. And then I see today Hudvey campaign awash in California cash. That according
love, baby.
To our buddy John Nichols at the Cap Times at the Nation, Eric Hudvey really does have roots in Wisconsin, but you wouldn't know it from the Republican U.S. Senate bid. Hudvey has run an oddly generic campaign, which places a heavy emphasis on talking points circulated by Republican strategists from Washington, in stark contrast to Tammy Baldwin, the Democratic incumbent who Hudvey would like to replace. And whereas Baldwin is constantly talking about the shipyards in Great Bay, farms in Rusk County, and northern Wisconsin small businesses that were hurt by this year's low snowfall, Hudvey mouths right-wing platitudes that sound like they've been downloaded from the Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell's campaign file. And based on how he's presented himself since announcing his candidacy, Hudvey could be running in any state, even California. Hudvey hasn't focused on his family ties to Madison's East Side, recalling the contributions made by his grandfather, his father, and his own business endeavors. Instead, he has come across as a jet-setting aristocrat whose message is more attuned to the elitist whining at the cocktail party at his $7 million Laguna Beach mansion, a far cry from the honest discourse you'll hear on North Main Street in Richland Center, where Baldwin launched her re-election bid. And Hudvey's insular approach has not served him well. He failed to build a broad campaign that might match Baldwin's Wisconsin-focused and Wisconsin-sustained candidacy. In particular, he's not looking to the grassroots for the ideas, the network, and the funding to give a campaign the true sense of place and direction. Dom, I want to jump down here to the dollars. The dollars, Dom, that's what's important. The weakness on the part of Hudvey's campaign has been driven home in recent days by his campaign finance reports. As a group, A Better Wisconsin Together observes, Eric Hudvey's Wisconsin campaign is funded largely by out-of-state Californians, like himself. In addition to lending his campaign $8 million from his own fortune, the watchdog organization notes, Hudvey has collected $60,000 from campaign donors with California ties. Hudvey also getting a boost from a super PAC that his brother has reportedly got rolling with a $1 million contribution. The money is being used to attack Baldwin as a career politician, and it's certainly true that Baldwin has been in politics for many years. As a Dane County Board Supervisor, a state rep, the first woman elected to the U.S. House from Wisconsin, and now for two terms as U.S. Senator, Baldwin has run bold campaigns that have gone against the odds again and again, and she's never lost an election. And that's not until now, Dom, that's ever. Why? Because she has been so deeply in touch with Wisconsin, she gets the state, she communicates that fact. Hudvey has failed to communicate a similar level of engagement with Wisconsin, even though he has connections that are worth mentioning, a misstep that despite his prodigious self-financing and hefty out-of-state donations, continue to undermine his candidacy. At least he went to the Slinger Speedway, Dom. You can't win.
With the folks.
You got to go to the Speedway, but preferably get the pledge right. I pledge. Say your name. More Devil's Advocates. Come back with us.
They were trying to intimidate us, but we didn't back down. They tried to intimidate us, but we didn't back down. At one point, there were over 100,000 protesters who occupied our state capitol, but we didn't back down. They went after me with death threats, and we didn't back down. They went after my family with threats, Tonette and our children, but we didn't back down. They went after a member of the Wisconsin Supreme Court in an election that otherwise would have been inconsequential. We didn't back down. They took us to federal and state court, and we didn't back down. They went after our state senators, and we didn't back down. They went after me in a recall election, and we didn't back down. Last year, they made me the number one target in America. Of all the elections, we were the number one target, and we did not back down. Instead, we fought, and we won.
Well, I won't back down.
Yeah, thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. We never back down. Join us on the lines at 844-967-2789.
Thank God Rich didn't play the Laura Trump version.
Don't tempt me.
Don't do it, please. God, no.
Was that wanker at the Iowa Freedom Caucus, Des Moines, Iowa, I believe, January 2015? Was that him bragging about what a cool guy he was?
You know, there's so many clips from the days, from the archives of Walker. I'm not clear where that one came from. I had to kind of pull it up late.
The Wankinator. I believe that's, look, January 2015. I think that might have been his speech from the stage. You know, he rolled up his sleeves and he walked around the podium and he didn't back down. And then Donald Trump came out a little bit later, I think almost next in succession, and just sort of killed him. The momentum in the room suddenly stolen by Donald Trump, but he was the belle of the ball, at least for a moment. Scott Walker was leading in the polls in Iowa there for a while, Dom. And that warm, and I know I said it was warm, but January day in Des Moines, it was
beautiful.
Yeah. It was gorgeous, upper 50s.
And sunny.
We saw Newt and we saw the whole cavalcade of Republican stars. I mean, Stabby McStaverson, Ben Carson was there, and I think Sarah Palin, and oh my God, everyone you would want to see. They were all in the same room, and
that's when Donald Trump told the adoring fans in the crowd how rich he was. Oh, I got $10 billion. You're going to be so proud of me of how rich I am. And that, of course, is what Republicans care about the most.
And the most interesting takeaway, other than the fact that the Citizens United group, that Citizens United group that put on this Iowa Freedom Caucus or whatever they called it.
Summit.
Yeah. A, they allowed us in, and B, we plopped down in the front row. Dude, you had front row seats for Trump. I mean, literally, like, you could have kicked him in the shins.
Yeah, it was real close. Not a lot of people in the room at the time. Or I asked him about, you know, he's a businessman. You know, what are you going to do about the national debt? Where he proceeded to tell us all about his very fancy new hotel at the post office in D.C.
Scott Walker didn't hit the spin room. He was too big shot. No, he's leading the polls then. That, and there were a lot of Wisconsin media figures in the spin room, but the wanker, Scott Walker.
Well, that's when he came walking out to Dropkick Murphys, right? And then after that, the Dropkick Murphys specifically asked Scott Walker to stop playing their music because, what was it? We literally hate you.
Yes. Shipping out to Boston. Later used in the Departed movie. Dom, the wanker on the Twitterverse today. Well, first he's putting out a psalm. You are my refuge, my shield, and I have put my hope in your word. Psalms 119, 114. And then just a little bit later, arrest them, remove them, expel them. And then one more, 26 minutes ago. It's already on the Google machine. I already found it via Google. Sorry to be on the road tomorrow, but happy to have President Donald Trump back in Wisconsin. Don't you mean former president, or do you think he's still the president, Scott? He will be just a few miles from our house. We will catch up with him on a future trip, as I'm sure he will be back often on the path to victory. And I would point out, when Scott Walker said, I will not back down, he was gearing up or running for president.
Yeah.
And then September 21st of that year, he did back down. He got out of the race. He wanted to clear the field for a true conservative to beat Trump. That was his mission, and he thought
that was his justification. Apparently, that's what God told him at the time. Well, first, he told him to get into the race. Then he told him to spend like a drunken sailor.
MC Hammer on tour.
Right, bringing the whole entourage to Iowa and, you know, setting up stages and music and lights at a local diner. I mean, the guy is such a mark. You know, the consultants saw this guy coming a mile away. Walker had a fat checkbook, and he blew through all of it very quickly. And then God said, well, you're out of money and you're pulling at 0.0, so maybe you should get out of the race.
I bet that was Tonette.
Same thing.
And then I had to sell your name down the river to Scott Walker's email campaign for a bumper sticker it was. And by virtue of that, Dom, forevermore, he's been able to sell your name to every other Republican. That's why you get all those donor asks.
So many asks.
But why the back down, Dom? Why are we chastising Scott Walker? Well, because he was a dumbass that said it. But it's not really for him today. It's Trump.
It is for Trump. Trump back in court today. Before they got started, Judge Mershon, he addressed the contempt issues. ABC News reporting that after Judge fined Donald Trump a total of $9,000 for 9 violations of the case's limited gag order, Trump was ordered to pay the fine by the close of business this Friday. He also ordered Trump to remove those posts from his Truth Social account and his campaign website by 2:15 today. Well, update on this from ABC. All 9 of former President Trump's social media posts cited by Judge Juan Merchan in his contempt of court ruling this morning have been removed. They've been removed. Apparently, it was done over the lunch break. Apparently, Donald Trump and the Republicans did back down.
You know, he sent me an email over his lunch break. He's very busy. Very industrious over this lunch break, I heard.
Well, I mean, he's got a lot of energy because he's sleeping in court again, man. I mean, come on.
Resting up for a big, big luncher. Folks, we are the devil's advocates. We rest up. And then we give it all between 3 and 6. Actually, I'm not fully rested. No, didn't man, sleep at all sleep. Last night.
That's obvious.
What's that? Am I tired or hangry, do you think?
Maybe a little bit of both.
The Devil's Advocates. So relevant, they have one foot in tomorrow.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. A little peace frog. Love it. Love it when you call us, 844-967-2789. Lori, you've been patient. Thanks for joining us from Monroe. What do you got for us?
Hey, well, you guys were talking about Eric Huffy earlier. I have an interesting story. His cousin, ooh, David Huffy, was Tammy Baldwin's guest of honor at the State of the Union.
I remember that.
He helped with the diabetes and stuff. So I grew up with David. I considered him my brother. I've hung out with the other Huffys, Eric and Janie and everybody else. But anyhow, David unexpectedly passed away a year ago while in Portugal hiking. My first call was my dad to tell him David died. My second was my brother. The third was Tammy Baldwin. Because in a foreign country, when you die, you know, it's a mess. Plus, you don't know the language. Tammy Baldwin stepped up to the plate, helped his wife, Betsy, get everything under control with the embassy, the autopsy, everything she needed in order to get David back to the United States. So it's just so interesting that Eric is running against Tammy, who has done nothing but help the Huffy family. So I hope he knows what Tammy did for his cousin. So I just wanted to say that it's just so ironic, you know, that he's running against Tammy when Tammy helped get David home and was, you know, David was her guest of honor at the State of the Union. So that's all I wanted to say is how wonderful she is and how awful he is. So thanks, Devils. And again, love your show. Love you guys.
Love you back, Lori. Love you more.
Thank you, Lori. Appreciate it. I didn't know that. That's interesting. But as you should, I mean, as a representative, especially a senator, you know, you represent everybody in the state.
Constituent and things come services.
Up. Yes, actually constituent services. Actual helping out. That's kind of the point.
Didn't Ron Johnson brag to us he had like 40 staffers in D.C.? That's what a U.S. senator's office is run by, 40 staffers. When Tim Ramjam, your buddy Rantham, when he was stripped of one of his staffers, he was down to half a staffer.
At some point, you got to start picking up the phone on your own, right?
That's actually how I met Joel Clayfish. He was answering his own phones at the rep's office, the assembly rep's office. When Joel was in the assembly, I called his office. He answered, "Hello." And you know, the first time we ever met, I totally lambasted him and he took it. And I thought he couldn't be all bad.
Yeah, it can't be all bad. You know, you gotta be able to take a little grief once in a while. It goes to the character of the person.
I actually find Joel, all things considered, to be one of the better guys I know. And I've known you for a long time, Dom. Yeah,
well, considering the company created, that's not necessarily saying much.
844. 844. Why do you always interrupt when I'm giving the phone number? You're the toxic one. 844-967-2789. I hope that's right. I haven't thought about that phone number in a long time. Dom, you know who's super aggressive? Be aggressive. Be aggressive. You know who's actually being super aggressive? You'd who's never guess. That? Tough on legislation. Tony Evers is going to set a record for vetoes.
Oh, damn, Tony, put the Republicans in their place in the state of Wisconsin. What do you do now?
Dom, here's the headline. I found this at the Urban Milwaukee Online Daily. That's my source. Evers vetoes GOP bills at a record rate. In 1 year, he vetoed 32% of all legislative bills. 1 in 3, Dom, compared to 3.7% for the average governor. Like 10 times as many vetoes each and every year than the average governor. He's aggressive. Democratic Governor Tony Evers vetoed 73 bills passed by the Republican-controlled legislature and rewrote 4 spending bills with partial vetoes over the last 2 years. No governor's veto has been overridden by lawmakers since 1985, and that won't change. And since taking office in January of 2019, Evers has vetoed 219 bills outright and 7 others partially. Vetoes denounced by Republicans who passed those bills. They just don't like Tony's aggressive alpha male nature.
Is that what it is?
It must be. He's very aggressive. And Evers' aide said he vetoed 126 bills and 1 other partially the state budget in the 2021-22 legislative session, and 20 bills and 2 others in part in the 1920 session. And midway through his second 4-year term, Evers can veto Republicans' bills with impunity for several reasons. First, the Democrats' job approval rating with registered voters, as measured by the Marquette University, has been 52 and 53% for 3 polls, significantly higher than the legislature's 34% approval rating in the Marquette's latest poll. And second, although there are 22 Senate Republicans, the 2/3 majority needed to override a veto, it is not true in the 99-member assembly, where Republicans and Democrats are scrambling to introduce themselves to and impress voters in new legislative districts before the November 5th elections. No Republican assembly members wants to return to the Capitol until January. So I think they're saying the scoreboard is set for the year. Everybody's out campaigning. First year Republican.
Hey, come on. It's May 1st tomorrow. You know, I mean, what kind of job do you have where you're going to bail out for 7 months?
That's better than the teachers got it. And you know how Scott Walker attacked the teachers.
That's a good point, Michael.
Well, there's plenty of times. I remember prior legislative sessions, they'd gavel out by February, end of February, yeah. March, they'd be done.
Time to campaign. Got to be done. All the work is done for the state. Welcome, everybody.
Dom, back to this UrbanMilwaukee.com online daily piece. First-term Republican Rep. Jerry O'Connor scored some of the governor's vetoes this way. He labeled 9 as election integrity bills.
Yeah, whatever, dude.
So those are like MAGA bills, like, and the only true winner is Trump, no matter what the outcome of the election is. Sign it, Tony. And Tony vetoed 9 of those, 8 as natural resources or gun rights bills, like less gun rights. No, more gun rights. If you're extending rights to inanimate, you know, pieces of iron and steel. More gun rights. 7 bills each for 3 issues. School choice. Jobs and workforce. Who knows what that means, Dom? And medical health care. I thought Tony was trying to keep the rural hospitals, especially in Eau Claire and Chippewa Falls. I thought Tony was trying to keep them open. That's sort of in contrast to the policies of most of these Republicans, Dom. Here's a quote. This governor continues to set records for the number of vetoes he executes. said an envious O'Connor because he's not nearly as aggressive. Evers overrode the elected legislators who represent the majority of Wisconsin voters. Well, Evers also technically represents the majority of Wisconsin voters. If you'll recall, Dom, he won twice.
He won. This is what I'm saying.
He uses the veto pen and the executive orders in dictatorial style. This is not how government should work. We need change in Madison. He's not on the ballot this year, sir. Suck it. That would be my advice. But I'm less concerned about others' feelings these days, Dom.
Weird how that works. Consider how Evers justified his recent veto of one Republican bill sponsored by Senator Corey Tomchick and Rep. Clint Moss that would have eliminated the requirement that employers obtain a work permit to hire 14 and 15-year-olds. I would say 14 and 15-year-old kids. But veto came despite a widespread worker shortage statewide. But aides to Evers noted the U.S. Department of Labor report found that the number of minors working in violation of child labor laws doubled between 2021 and 2023, and that many of them worked in hazardous or dangerous jobs. Yeah, man, what did Grothman say? Everyone wants to work 6 or 7 days a week. Man, we got a labor problem? No, don't work with the immigrant population to get them above board, out of the shadows, and on the books. No, don't do that. Just let's get the 14 and 15-year-old kids to work. And hell, we should have them serving cocktails at the bar. That's a great idea. Back to the urban Milwaukee. Announcing his veto at a union event, Evers noted that he proclaimed 2024 the year of the worker because real, meaningful, and long-term solutions are needed to address the workforce shortage. In April last year, our state unemployment rate hit a historic 2.4%. Last year, Wisconsin had the all-time lowest number of unemployed workers ever in modern history. And our state's labor force participation rate also consistently remained above the national average throughout the year, Evers said, adding that Wisconsinites work hard.
Don't tell Tim Michaels.
My comprehensive workforce plan would invest in childcare statewide to prevent the industry's looming collapse, expand paid family leave to help us compete with our neighboring states, invest in our higher education institutions, and bolster high-demand industries. Unfortunately, Republicans have rejected my plan. But Evers dismissed the bill to eliminate the work permits for the 14 and 15-year-olds as no serious proposal to address gubernatorial statewide issues and wrong for our kids and wrong for our state. At an assembly committee meeting on this bill, on his bill last year, Moses noted that Wisconsin abolished work permits for 16 and 17-year-olds in 2017. That got, quote, Wisconsin about halfway there. If a teenager wants a job, they should be able to apply to a job and start working, Moses told the committee. They shouldn't need approval by their school and state to obtain a job. But foreshadowing the governor's veto, Democratic Rep. Francesca Hong said the bill should be killed. The change is an absolute erosion of our willingness to help protect kids.
Kids, kids, we need the workers.
Got to get those work, those workers, get them working. A 2023 report by the nonpartisan Legislative Reference Bureau confirmed that Evers vetoes at a record-setting pace. Its report showed that the 1927-28 session, Governor Fred Zimmerman vetoed 90 bills the previous high, while Evers in the 21-22 session vetoed 126 bills, an all-time record.
You're
Evers
number one!
The GOAT, baby!
Very aggressive.
Evers' record looks even more remarkable compared to the average governor. A quote here, while Wisconsin governors have historically vetoed an average of 3.7% of bills passed by the legislature, Evers vetoed 32% of bills passed by the 2021-22 legislature. No governor has come close to matching this.
He's like 1,000 times more aggressive than your average governor, Don.
But there's only one side of the equation. The other side is, you know, what kind of crap is this legislature pumping out?
Better candidates, better ideas.
No, maybe not. Not if you can't get the governor to sign it. Or this is all performative politics. And how much of this is related to the big steal and you know, this election integrity? Well, apparently at least, what, 7 or 8 of them? So you got to consider not just Evers and his actions, but what those Republicans are pumping out of the state capitol.
Certainly we want Tony on that wall. He's doing a good job. Oh, yeah. And stopping most of the bad legislation from being enacted into law. I think he did take a couple of opportunities to play partisan, though. We could have had tax cuts, man. We're sitting on a surplus still. They're closing down UW campuses, especially the two-year variety. I mean, when did we stop investing in higher education? Oh, yeah, under the Wanker, under Scott Walker. Tony, you're the education governor. You were the fix-it. Start fixing it, man. Do what you can. But a lot of campuses closing. I don't think this bodes well for the long-term health of the state of Wisconsin. That's the investments where we should be putting it. You know, educating our kids, keeping them not on the farm, but in the state.
Kids, they got to work, man. 14, 15-year-olds, they shouldn't get a permit. They don't need permission. They should just be able to sign up and work those 8 or 12-hour shifts and, you know, go to school. Maybe, maybe not. Does it really even matter? Because it's really about the paycheck, right?
Well, suppressing the wage of the adult workers, maybe? Yeah. Is it that big a paycheck? Come back. More Devil's Advocates. It's barely a paycheck for us, too.
You're listening to the radio show your mother warned you about, The Devil's Advocates.
Thank you for listening to The Devil's Advocates radio show. Welcome to join us anytime on the lines at 844-967-2789.
Dominic, we're going to turn our attention to the Trump trial. The sound from Donald Trump, you know, post gag order finding that he had violated it 9 times. He backed down.
He did back down.
You know, he is generating interesting commerce in New York City right now, though. I find this article interesting. Line dudes raking cash, offering front row seats to Trump's trial.
What?
At Donald Trump's New York Hush Money criminal trial, I found this at the Raw Story, one of my preferred aggregators, Dom. It's about to enter its third week. Robert Samuel, who owns the niche company, Same Old Line Dudes, is making cash getting people a front row seat. According to a profile at Salon, Samuel started his company 12 years ago after he lost his job with AT&T. His new business allowed him to pay people, allowed people to pay him to reserve a spot in line for new Apple iPhone releases. And it evolved from there.
Wow.
I've never been that guy, Dom, but anyways. It grew from me doing it myself, and then I realized that there was a demand. I started pulling in people closest to me, my friends and family. New York is this rich, fertile ground. Things to see, things to do, things to buy, experience, taste. Line Dudes has held spots for Brooklyn Pizza, Ramen Burgers, Rainbow Bagels, and Cronut Pastries, PlayStation games, and sample sales at fashion houses, according to Salon. And now the company is reserving spots for members of the public and journalists wanting to get a seat at the Trump trial. Samuel said his company has built up a good rapport with media agencies. We're the go-to when you don't want their reporters standing in line. Dom, I need that guy for tomorrow at Trump. I don't want to stand in line at a Trump rally. Line Dudes has previous experience with the high-profile trials in Manhattan. For example, the 2021 trial of Ghislaine Maxwell, who was ultimately convicted for a role in Jeffrey Epstein's sex trafficking ring. The company also involved in last fall's trial of cryptocurrency fraudster Sam Bankman-Fried and E. Jean Carroll's 2 civil suits against Trump for sexual assault and defamation. There's so many allegations against Trump. They're going to have lots of business, Dom. And Trump trials have been good business for Samuel since courtroom space is limited. His company charges $50 an hour for places in Trump's trial line, which is twice his regular rate. That seems worth it. I would do that. I would pay, depending on the day, depending on how broke I am, how much money the kids took out of my wallet. Some days, I'd be willing to stand in line for an hour for $50. Other days, I'd be more than willing to pay someone to $50 to stand in line for me. This is such a high-profile type of assignment, Samuel said. You run the risk of, you know, coming in contact with protesters and supporters. So we charge a premium. It's surge so, like, pricing they, in Manhattan. So
they physically line dudes. They physically have staff go there and
wait in line.
Wait in line for you.
You want those hot concert tickets? Pay line dudes. You want the hottest Trump trial seating in the gallery? Pay line dudes. I mean, $50 an hour to get inside the courtroom for a national news organization? Oh, well worth it.
Yeah.
Even if you got to pay them 3-4 hours. I mean, hell, they soak you for that just for a good internet connection at most of these.
And a power. Right. Literally, you go to some of these conventions, they'll charge you $500 for power and $500 for internet. Well, hey, welcome.
You're a captive audience.
And the booth itself is maybe $200. I mean, it's just such a scam. Hey, can I bring my own power or internet? No, you can't. No generators. You got to use ours. Remember, so you can get a booth without the power. But come on. I mean, most things are done online. Like, when's the last time you actually went to buy concert tickets, like, physically? It's been a long time.
I've never.
Didn't, like, Ticketmaster used to be at Sears or something along? You know what I mean? I remember, like, Rich, you know what I'm talking about. You're an old dog. It's been a long time since I sat in line for concert tickets.
I never stood in line for concert tickets. Even when we used to go to stuff when we were younger men, I would pay the Dom markup. It'd be at least $50 an hour. I guarantee it.
Yeah. Hey, listen,
some Bon Jovi tickets come to mind. Very overpriced.
If Dominic's got to do it, there's got to be a premium on it, man. You know, it's just how it is. I'm a professional, and I deserve the premium. I'm like a line dude.
What's that make me? I want your job. Folks, we're the Devil's Advocate. Scott, Trump coming up soon. Would you do it? Dom, which one would you be? You can be extremely impatient, especially with, like, flipping the TV channels. I hate when you've got the remote control.
Hey, man, no one's got time for commercials.
Well, I know, but, you know, mid-show, you're flipping.
It's a boring topic.
So clearly, that would indicate to me that you don't have the patience to stand in line, even for the most
vaunted of concert tickets. $50 an hour, you know, they're probably paying their folks, what, 20?
Maybe.
You know, there's got to be a spread. Yeah, sure. Right. So would I stand in line for $20 an hour? I doubt it.
$22.50?
Maybe $100. I'll stand in line for $100 an hour. That's what I'll do.
Well, there might be some concerts. Here's what I would pay for. A dude to go stand in the bathroom line for me at Summerfest. And then when I'm ready, that would be worth the $50 easy.
It might be.
I might need him to get in line more than once an hour, though. Depends on how it's flowing.
Those porta potties, man. You better get there early. Otherwise, you know, it gets hot in the summer, let's just say.
Steamy. Ooh, that stings the nose.
It stings the nostrils. Got some bits of real panther in it, so you know it's good.
Come back. Devil's Advocate, 63% of the time. We're right every time.